The visit over the last couple of days in China shows once again the complete bankruptcy of the U.S. when they talk about international community. Like John Ross just spelled it out. International community is what? It's the United States and their very fragile, fragile allies in Europe.
Thank you so much. Arnold August, author and journalist from Montreal. John Ross, thank you. Senior fellow, Chongyang Institute for Financial Studies from London. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Takwe and the team, it's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Qul inna salati wa nusuki wa mahyaya wa mamati lillahi rabbil alameen la sharika lah wa bithalika umirtu wa ana awalul muslimin. Qul غير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون. وهو الذي جعلكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعض
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things. And no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed, and He it is who has made you successors in the land, and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran rejects a joint statement by the US and GCC members, saying it is in line with Washington's strategy to sow division among regional countries. The Syrian president says sabotage by terrorist groups and sanctions are complicating the country's situation following last week's deadly earthquake. Also ahead, China imposes sanctions on two American companies for selling arms to Taiwan, amid rising tensions over the shooting down of an alleged Chinese spy balloon. Thank you for joining us. Our top story, Iran has rejected a joint statement by the US and the member states of the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council. Tehran says the statement is in line with the American regime's long-standing strategy to foment division among regional countries. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said the U.S.'s destructive and interventionist policies are behind the existing crises in West Asia and the Persian Gulf. He noted that Iran believes in regional diplomacy and maintains that the ongoing crises must be resolved through political solutions. Kanani added that U.S. supports Takfiri terrorism and Israel's crimes against the Palestinians and is responsible for the devastating war in Yemen. He hoped that regional countries would work to promote peace, security, and sustainable development in the region through good understanding of Washington's evil policies. The UN Security Council has circulated a draft resolution demanding Israel cease its settlement activities in the occupied Palestinian territories. The resolution, which calls for the immediate and complete cessation of Israel's settlement activities, was circulated ahead of a meeting on the situation in Palestine. The draft resolution reaffirms that the establishment of Israeli settlements has no legal validity and is a flagrant violation of international law. The Security Council is scheduled to meet on Monday to discuss Palestine. The new development followed a decision by Israel on Sunday to legalize nine settlement outposts in the occupied West Bank. The U.S. has already rejected the draft, describing it as unhelpful without explicitly threatening a veto. Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah has warned the United States and its allies against creating chaos in Lebanon. He made the remarks while he was addressing people during a memorial ceremony for three of Hezbollah's most prominent leaders. Mariam Saleh reports from Beirut.
On Thursday, Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah warned the United States and its allies that its attempts to stir chaos in the country will not be fruitful.
I'll tell the U.S., if you create chaos in Lebanon, then you will witness chaos in the entire region. If you target our people with your conspiracies, then we will use our power and arms to make you feel pain, even if this means war against your beloved Israel.
The leader of the resistance group also said that the 2019 protests in Lebanon were merely part of a U.S. ploy, which took advantage of weaknesses in the country as part of a new strategy after the failure of direct military invasions.
Lebanon has, from the year 2019, been the target of a new U.S. plot. First, it's a plot to eradicate the achievements and the victories of the resistance and its martyrs. And second, it's a plot to take Lebanon back to being under the hegemony of the U.S., which wants to impose its conditions on the country's domestic affairs and its conditions on relations with the enemy.
Nasrallah, who addressed people during the memorial ceremony of three of Hezbollah's martyred leaders, also emphasized that supporters of the resistance group who are suffering from economic crisis will continue to support the group. Observers believe that all stalemates in Lebanon, whether the inability to elect a president or lack of economic reforms, are all the result of a wave of subtle interference by the U.S.
The U.S. is pressurizing Lebanon economically to impose its conditions and bring to power a president who is loyal to Washington and is not friendly with the resistance, so that it can implement its policies by means of soft power. Having said that, it would not seem that the U.S. has launched a war on Lebanon or the resistance. While it would seem this is an internal Lebanese affair, this is where the threat lies in their plots.
Nasrallah also touched upon the issue of offshore oil and gas exploration, saying Hezbollah will hinder Israel's production of gas from oil fields should procrastination by the companies who have contracts with Lebanon continue.
After assassination of any prominent leader of Hezbollah, the resistance would go through a landmark transformation. Now, in light of what analysts see as a massive U.S. attempt to choke Lebanon politically and economically, the resistance progress is unhindered. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
Staying in the region where the Syrian president has expressed his gratitude to friendly countries, including regional Arab states, for helping Damascus in dealing with last week's deadly quake. Bashar al-Assad said in a televised speech that those countries' assistance enhanced Syria's ability to confront the difficult conditions at critical hours. He added that despite all the assistance, Syria will continue to face social and economic challenges for months and years. He noted that sabotage by terrorist groups and sanctions imposed on the country are further complicating the situation. Following the quake, Syria has received about 120 plane loads of assistance from friendly countries, including Iran and some Arab states, which restored ties with Damascus during the past few years. So the earthquake in Syria has laid bare the devastating effects of years of Western sanctions against the war-torn country. Syrians are calling for an end to the economic siege as millions of people remain in desperate need for humanitarian assistance. More details in this report.
Heads of NGOs in Syria have gathered to loudly voice an urgent need for help. In Damascus, more than 550 NGOs read out a statement before media outlets calling on the U.S. to lift its unilateral economic sanctions on Syria, explaining the years-long siege deprived Syria from its basic needs and equipment needed to rescue those affected by the deadly earthquake.
Today, I apologize to the victims who we heard their voices under the rubble but could not help. Our volunteers were hearing them but couldn't save them because we do not have necessary equipment. 12 years of sanctions left us without required vehicles and rescue equipment. Many people died under the rubble because of those sanctions.
Speakers say the recent ease of U.S. sanctions on Syria to help humanitarian aid reach the country is not effective. That's because banks, companies, and governments around the world are still reluctant to engage with Syria, as they might face legal obstacles in the future. Western states claim that food and medicine is not included in their list of sanctions, but the reality is vastly different.
Sanctions have affected my life, my neighbors, and all Syrian people. We don't have fuel or electricity, and this has raised prices of everything like food and medicine. This is unbearable, especially after the earthquake.
We all here came to say lift economic sanctions. This country cannot stand any more suffering. Even before the earthquake, we were collapsing economically. Those sanctions are only affecting the ordinary people, not the government.
Here, rescue workers are in a battle against time. The death toll keeps rising, and those who could get away from the earthquake are now struggling to survive with a lack of food and shelter. Syrians say it's about time the U.S. and its Western allies end the economic siege that has caused enormous pain and suffering for innocent citizens. They ask for a just and fair world where humanity comes first before all political agendas. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
China has imposed sanctions on two U.S. companies by putting them on its unreliable entities list over arms sales to Taiwan. The new bans came amid heightened tensions between the two countries after the U.S. military shot down what it said was a Chinese spy balloon. The sanctions bar Lockheed Martin and a unit of Raytheon Technologies from engaging in import and export activities related to China. They also banned the companies from further investment in China and barred their senior management from entering the country. The two companies make fighter jets and missiles, which were used in shooting down an alleged Chinese spy balloon. China has warned of countermeasures against relevant U.S. entities that sought to undermine its sovereignty and security. Beijing had already sanctioned the two companies over a $100 million arms deal. And China says it has achieved a major and decisive victory over COVID-19. In a meeting, Chinese top leaders said that the country has kept its COVID-19 death rates among the lowest in the world thanks to continuous efforts to optimize prevention and control measures since November 2022. China abruptly ended its zero COVID policy in early December last year, with 80% of its 1.4 billion population becoming infected. And North Korea warns of what it calls unprecedentedly strong responses if Seoul and Washington move ahead with their planned military drills next week. The North Korean Foreign Ministry slammed the upcoming exercises, saying they will only cause tensions to rise in the region. It also said Pyongyang would consider additional military action if the UN Security Council does not stop pressuring North Korea under the influence of the United States. Washington and Seoul say they will hold tabletop drills at the Pentagon on February 22, in order to improve operations of American nuclear assets and strengthen deterrence. The two countries describe their exercises as defensive, citing the growing number of North Korea's missile tests. Pyongyang, however, says the drills are in fact invasion rehearsals. Russia and Ukraine say they have exchanged more than 200 prisoners of war in their latest prisoner swap. Russia's defense ministry said 101 Russian soldiers have returned from the territory controlled by Kiev following negotiations. It's added that the released servicemen will be sent to Moscow for treatment and rehabilitation in medical institutions. Ukrainian authorities, for their part, said 100 soldiers and one civilian have been returned by Russia. Over the past months, the two sides have exchanged hundreds of prisoners despite suspension of broader diplomatic talks to end the war. Earlier this month, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky said more than 1,700 Ukrainians had been released by Russia since the start of the war last February. Meanwhile, a growing number of EU lawmakers are at odds over the West's support for the war in Ukraine. The European Union alone has pumped 67 billion euros into the country since last March. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
The voices calling for de-escalation and peace in Ukraine are getting louder inside the European Parliament. However, the heckles against such calls are also growing. It's a trend that points to division.
This war has been triggered by the West. The EU has been hard hit by its own sanctions. The Nord Stream gas pipeline has been blown up by the US. Put an end to sanctions. We need to work on peace.
Dozens of legislators are demanding more tanks, long-range missiles and warplanes for Ukraine.
We need to give Ukraine what it needs to win.
At the same time, there are those who oppose more bloodshed.
Zelensky has been making the rounds, begging for more weapons, but not one word to say about peace. How many of his own people must he conscript and feed into the carnage?
NATO defence ministers pledged on Wednesday to keep the flow of weapons to Ukraine going.
This is consuming an enormous quantity of Allied ammunition and depleting our stockpiles.
Members of the military alliance have agreed to restock. That spells a massive payday for manufacturers of lethal weapons. A great deal of corruption in Ukraine has been highlighted during a conference here in Brussels.
As journalists, you just have to do what is right. You have to try to expose wrongdoing or at least shine a light on it where it may exist so that wider investigations can see if it really is a problem and something that needs to be dealt with.
There are divisions within the big Western organisations. Turkey is blocking Sweden from joining NATO. Hungary does not like the idea of Ukraine joining the European Union.
Foreign affairs ministers from across the EU will meet on Monday to rubber stamp a 10th package of sanctions against Russia. Some analysts claim it indicates previous measures against Moscow have failed. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
To the United Kingdom now, where nurses are to stage yet another strike amid a bitter dispute with the government over what they call its refusal to negotiate over pay. The Royal College of Nursing, a union representing nurses in Britain, said the strike will run continuously for 48 hours starting from March the 1st. The industrial action will affect more than 120 state-run health facilities. In another sign of escalation, nursing staff working in emergency departments, intensive care units and cancer care will also join the move for the first time. The strikers demand a pay rise to cope with a high inflation. It will be the latest in a series of walkouts that hit various sectors over the past year, causing widespread disruption in the country, which is grappling with a cost of living crisis. That brings an end to the International Bulletin for this hour.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless.
Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive. And make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
In the limelight.
In the latest jab over aerial surveillance, China says high-altitude balloons from the United States had flown over Chinese airspace without permission more than 10 times since the start of last year. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. China's Global Times has covered this story and tells us more. U.S. high-altitude balloons have illegally flown over Chinese airspace on more than 10 occasions without the approval of the relevant Chinese authorities since January of 2022. And the first thing the United States should do is to reflect on its own behavior instead of slandering, smearing, and provoking confrontation. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson, Wang Wenbin, said on Monday, 13th of February, at a regular press briefing. An unmanned Chinese civilian airship's unintended entry into U.S. airspace was due to force majeure, and the incident was totally an accident, according to Wang Wenbin. China firmly opposed the U.S. use of force to attack the Chinese unmanned airship, which was indiscriminate use of force and an overreaction, said Wang. For a long time, the U.S. has abused its technological advantages to carry out large-scale indiscriminate clandestine operations and stealing of secrets across the world, including from its allies, violating the sovereignty and interests of other countries and regions, and violating international laws and basic norms of international relations, Wang Wenbin said. The U.S. is deservedly the world's largest repeat offender for spying and use of surveillance equipment, Wang noted. The U.S. has also frequently sent aircraft and warships to conduct close reconnaissance in China. With 657 flights in 2022, and 64 flights in the South China Sea in January of this year alone, which seriously jeopardized China's national security and undermined regional peace and stability, the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson said. It is also common for U.S. balloons to illegally enter other countries' airspace, Wang Wenbin noted. China's handling of the matters is responsible and professional, the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson said in response to a question over how China responded to U.S. high-altitude balloons illegally flying over Chinese airspace on at least 10 occasions. The Reuters news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. China said on Monday, 13th of February, that U.S. high-altitude balloons had flown over its airspace without permission more than 10 times since the beginning of 2022, widening a diplomatic row after the U.S. military shut down what it says was a Chinese spy balloon. Since last year, the U.S.'s high-altitude balloons have undergone more than 10 illegal flights into Chinese airspace without the approval of the relevant Chinese authorities, the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin said at a regular press briefing in Beijing in response to a question. Wang Wenbin did not specifically describe the balloons as military or for espionage purposes and did not provide further details. Asked how China had responded to such incursions into its airspace, Wang Wenbin said its response had been responsible and professional. The U.S. Defense Department, the Pentagon, did not immediately respond to a request for comment. China's assertion comes after the United States shut down what it says was a Chinese spy balloon off the coast of South Carolina on 4th of February, after it had drifted across the continental United States for about a week. In response to the Chinese balloon, the United States postponed a visit to Beijing by Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. China says the balloon was a civilian research aircraft that had mistakenly blown off course and accused the United States of overreacting. The first thing the United States should do is to look at itself, to change its ways, and not to smear and incite confrontation, Wang Wenbin said. In recent days, the U.S. military have shut down three other flying objects over North America. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson, Wang Wenbin, said he had no information on the latest three objects shut down by the United States. Russia's Sputnik news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. On 4th of February, the United States shot down what it claimed was a Chinese surveillance balloon over the Atlantic Ocean. China insists the airship was engaged in scientific research and had been accidentally blown off course. US-made balloons have been detected carrying out incursions into China's airspace at least 10 times since January of 2022, according to China's foreign ministry. It is not unusual for US balloons to illegally enter other countries' airspace. The US needs to reflect upon its own behavior instead of slandering, smearing, and provoking confrontation. The Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin stated at a regular press briefing in Beijing on Monday, 13th of February. In response to the US rhetoric following the recent balloon incident, the spokesman for the Chinese foreign ministry indicated that China reserved the right to take necessary means to deal with relevant incidents. The fact that a Chinese civilian unmanned airship carried out an unintended incursion into US airspace was due to unavoidable accidental circumstances, Wang Wenbin added. The shooting down of the balloon, which China insists was engaged in scientific research but fell victim to high winds, was denounced by the ministry as indiscriminate use of force. As for the United States, it was described by the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson as the world's largest repeat offender when it came to spying and indiscriminate use of surveillance. Washington has repeatedly sent aircraft and warships to carry out reconnaissance missions over China, with 64 flights in the South China Sea in January of this year alone. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin underscored, adding that this seriously jeopardizes China's national security while also undermining regional peace and stability. China's response to US high-altitude balloons illegally flying over Chinese airspace was at all times responsible and professional, Wang Wenbin added.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Midstream.
Seconds carried thousands of heart-rending scenes when the catastrophe befell Turkey and Syria at the dawn of February 6, with its dire effects still extending to this moment. The vast majority of the world came to the aid of Turkey, which was also devastated by the earthquake that occurred. With thousands of dead and wounded victims, global solidarity was the master of the scene, and every country started sending everything that came to mind via planes, trucks, and convoys to extend a helping hand to Turkey, with humanity almost covering the sky before stopping at Syria to manifest double standards in all its ugliness. It is crucial for me that you guys know that what I just said is not a diminution of what happened to Turkey. We are all in solidarity with the victims because the basic principle of humanity is that it is indivisible. Unlike the majority of countries in the world that flattened it to the ground and crumbled it into particles when the matter came to Syria. The best proof is the picture whose pain cut us deep as it documented the scene of the planes from every direction as they headed to Turkey, leaving Syria alone, except for its allies and those very few Arab states. There are no incidents here that one can evoke except that of the planes of countries which knew the way to the skies of Syria when they started bombing and destroying it and wreaking havoc and destruction on it more than a decade ago. Yet they chose to turn away from it when the catastrophe of the deadly earthquake befell it, and without an iota of shame, these states continued to shower us with the words of humanity as they themselves inhaled the stench of hypocrisy that reeked of them in an abominable way. As if the earthquake that struck Syria, which had a magnitude of about 7.8 on the Richter scale, was a cuddle by the earth, and its victims are not enclosed within the human rights articles claimed by the West. Hours turned to days. There might still be people living waiting for someone to lift them, and there are dead bodies that would like to hide underground instead of under wreckage. The rescue teams, civil defense, and ambulance crews are not able to bear this tragedy alone in a country that endured grief and aggression in the aftermath of the war that weighed her down and exhausted her for years, as well as the unjust siege imposed on her. In the current talk about the responsibility of Western sanctions for exacerbating the suffering of the Syrians as a result of the recent earthquake, it is not only a matter of sanctions obstructing the arrival of urgent international humanitarian aid to the stricken areas. The most important thing is the cumulative impact of the losses caused by Western sanctions on the reality of Syrian capabilities, the conditions of the infrastructure, and the ability of service facilities to respond in cases of disasters and emergencies. Unfortunately, the world needed a catastrophic event such as the recent earthquake to finally see that Western sanctions do increase the suffering and the pain of Syrian civilians. Welcome to the Mideast Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. Today, the United States of America is the hub of global savagery, the source of absolute evil, and the real repository of terrorism that usurps peoples. After years of directing armed terrorist groups and seeking funding from Persian Gulf oil farms to destroy Syria, its infrastructure and foundations of the state's entity, strike its service institutions and logistical equipment, provide a complete cover for Daesh, and support it to tear the nation's map through religious fascism, the American occupation sits on the Syrian oil wells, relying on its cheap tools to steal it. It is truly a continuation of organized terrorism, especially today, as the U.S. illegal sanctions and blockade on relief operations in Syria killed Syrians under the rubble in the aftermath of one of the most devastating earthquakes the Levant has seen in more than 100 years. To discuss this issue with us from inside Aleppo, the city that has been officially dubbed a devastated city, is Antoine George Maqdis, a political commentator, founder and general director of Warsha, owner and founder at Samawir, and co-founder at SavePix.Syria. You can find his work on Instagram and Facebook. I want to thank you immensely for being with us, Antoine, firstly, from inside Aleppo at these very difficult times. But the natural catastrophe that Syria was exposed to revealed the depth of the humanitarian catastrophe and the social factors such as food security and medical care and other human rights that are being denied by the West to the Syrian people for very false reasons. How did the situation look during this first week of devastation, and what would have made the relief better?
The situation is a catastrophe now, literally a catastrophe on the ground. You can't imagine the number of people that they lost their life. I can tell you stories and stories about what's happening on the ground now in Aleppo. You can't imagine. I've lived in Syria and in Aleppo in the last 11 years. I witnessed everything that happened during the war. But what happened the previous week, it was more than I could handle. My friend, the number of people who died till now, we don't know. There is more than 150 buildings that it fall down in Aleppo. Till now, there is no real numbers that we can depend on. The people till now, you can find dead people under their buildings. Today, I was in Latakia, in the rural side of Latakia, in Hama, in Jable. This is a Syrian catastrophe. This is a national catastrophe, what's happening now here. Till now, no one came to rescue or to pick up the people under the rubble.
It is devastating to hear it, as well as once we watch it as well, Antoine. I cannot imagine what you guys are going through, and I cannot thank you enough for taking the time and finding the place to actually be with us and tell the people of the world what is really going on and how the people of Syria are suffering. But the American occupation took advantage of the humanitarian submission of some Arab and some regional countries and governments, in addition to the European consent, obviously, and the ugliness of Western hypocrisy, which is based on lies and media misinformation in the name of what they call human rights and freedoms. Yet we saw a handful of nations from hours after the earthquake, we saw states and people and nations breaking those Western-based rules and landing in Damascus and Aleppo to provide whatever is needed for the people. How can you describe the scene inside Aleppo, Hama, Latakia, and Tartus? And I know that today you were also in Jable as aid first started arriving on the day of the catastrophe.
This war now, it's not for human anymore. When there is a bully like the U.S. controlling all nations, you are talking about humanity, humans without humanity. Look, during the war, what happened, everyone that lost his life, it was because of the war. But for me, as a Syrian civilian, as a Syrian citizen, each person who died during this crisis, his blood is on humanity. Now, thanks to a number of countries that they are like us, they are third world countries, there are countries who are under the American bullying, like Iran, Algeria, Egypt, UAE. Those people who are like us, they came to help us because they can feel our pain. But everything that happened till now, it's not enough. We are talking about one of the biggest waves of internal displacement in the history of Syria.
Can you tell us more about the relief? How is the relief and aid being distributed to the people affected?
There is a number of NGOs that they are doing their job on the ground. You can find now a number of Iraqi NGOs, like the Iraqi Red Crescent, the Iraqi civil defense. They are giving food packages, blankets. And most of the rescue teams who are like the professional ones, they came from Iran, Armenia, and China. Now, one of the beautiful things that I saw in the previous days, that you can see multicultural people who are coming in a humanitarian way to help their brothers in humanity. Most of the IDP centers now, there is companies who are sending food. They are making, like the Iranian, they are doing cuisines for the people so they can eat hot plates. Because as you know, that Syria now, it's in winter, and this is one of the coldest days in our year. So I saw many times a number of Iranian giving rice, soups to the people who had to leave their house.
Antoine, you are there, and we also have a lot of good friends in the West and in the Arab and Islamic world as well who are watching us right here on Press TV. They all want to pitch in, and they all want to help out during these very tough times. How can they do that? What is the best way to do that while maneuvering around the sanctions? What do you suggest?
Actually, there is three main things. The one who can come to Syria, we need him to come to Syria. Okay? We need people here. We need experts on the ground. Because the size of the catastrophe, we can't handle it alone. We need now people from all kinds of professionality. Like, we need civil engineers, we need architects, we need doctors, we need a lot of people to help us. Second of all, we need an international advocacy campaign just to lift the sanctions on Syria, because everyone thinks that what we are living now in Syria is just because of the catastrophe that we had, the earthquake. But actually, we have been living under an American sanction for more than 14 years. Our infrastructure is destroyed. We don't have ambulance. We don't have a civil defense. Third of all, we need all kinds of support.
Antoine Maqdis, it just breaks my heart to see you to see you in Aleppo, to see you how tough it is right now. I want to thank you very much for all the time that you have given us. I want to thank you for being there when we need to hear the truth. And we want to tell you that we are with you. We are with the Syrians. Antoine George Maqdis, a political commentator and founder of Samawer Warsha, and also co-founder of SafePix Syria. Thank you very much for being with us. Now, ladies and gents, I want you to stay with us, because after the break, we are going to talk about how illegal those so-called sanctions are and how the U.S. actually did not break any of those sanctions. They did not lift any of them. It was just all in media hoax just after the break.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
The accumulated effects resulting from the Western sanctions imposed on Syria since 2011 constituted a major obstacle to the rapid response of civil defense teams and medical teams to rescue those trapped under the rubble of hundreds of housing units that collapsed on top of their residents in each of Aleppo, Latakia, Tartus, and Hama. In the current talk about the responsibility of Western sanctions for exacerbating the suffering of the Syrians as a result of the recent earthquake, unfortunately, the world needed a catastrophic event such as the recent earthquake to fathom that Western sanctions do actually increase the suffering and the pain of Syrians. More details about those sanctions in the following report.
While the final death toll until the writing of this report reached more than 4,800 people and at least 7,300 others were injured in Syria as a result of the 7.8 magnitude earthquake, a large number of international air cargo and shipping companies refrained from landing at Syrian airports and docking at Syrian ports for fear of U.S. and European sanctions. To clarify the impact of U.S. and Western sanctions in obstructing the rapid response to the repercussions of the recent earthquake, two reasons can be identified. First, the cumulative effect of the ongoing sanctions since 2011, which hindered the efforts of government institutions in their efforts to rehabilitate and repair infrastructure and service facilities and provide them with their work requirements and necessary needs. This cumulative effect is evident in the following results. Direct sanctions on the energy, construction, and reconstruction sectors, banks, and others, which prevented the country from securing its needs for modern machinery, equipment, spare parts, and technical support. Accordingly, these sectors were not in a position to deal with the repercussions of the earthquake without international support. The exchange rate of the Syrian lira decreased significantly during the years that followed the tightening of the U.S. blockade on the country at the beginning of the year 2019, as the exchange rate decreased from about 447 pounds in 2018 to about 6,800 pounds now. This decline left its direct and indirect effects on the country's ability to secure its needs of food, medicine, oil derivatives, technical equipment, and others. The high cost of importing goods and materials due to the high risks of dealing with Syria, where official estimates in Syria indicate that sanctions have contributed to an increase in costs by about 50%. The food and drug sectors are the most present here, despite Western talk of excluding them from sanctions, but they were actually affected to a great extent. As for the second reason for the impact of U.S. sanctions in weakening the Syrian response to the repercussions of the earthquake, it lies in the network of fear of dealing with the Syrian government, which the U.S. administration has been keen to spread around the world over the past years, whether through public pressure or indirect threats. Otherwise, what can be explained as follows. The reluctance of most international companies in many disciplines and sectors to cooperate and deal with Syrian governmental and private institutions, and they often require dealing through a third party, like a company in another country or a non-Syrian port. And the justifications are always the fear of exposure to U.S. sanctions. Unfortunately, this network of fear has reached companies and institutions in countries that do support Syria politically. What does that mean? It means more costs, expenses, living and health crises that Syrians are forced to bear despite the already difficult economic conditions. Governments are afraid of economic cooperation and sending relief aid to Syria before and after the recent earthquake. The most important example of this is Washington's refusal to grant the Egyptian government a written permit to export gas to Lebanon through Syrian territory, and its continuous pressure on Jordan to prevent the border crossing with Syria from operating at its full capacity. Despite the seriousness of the long negative impact of Western sanctions on the Syrian economy, the lifting of these sanctions can contribute within a short period of time to achieving positive results that will have an impact on the lives and livelihood of the population, such as quickly and remotely restoring the country's need for commodities and essential needs, especially in the health and food sectors.
To discuss this matter with us from Beirut is Dr. Omar Nashabi, political analyst and loyal expert in human rights and in sanctions, international sanctions as well. I want to thank you, Dr. Omar Nashabi, for joining us to talk about this very important matter at these very tough times. Now, the U.S. issued new Syrian sanction regulations on Friday, stating that it is giving authorization for transactions related to earthquake relief effects inside Syria. Now, Syrian banks still cannot receive wire transactions. Western Union, PayPal, and Patreon are global financial institutions that do not work inside Syria, and some of them do not work inside Lebanon itself. If we want to receive funds and send it from here to Syria as well. So what is it? I mean, was it just all a show by the U.S., this new statement they released, this new regulation that they're easing the sanctions, are they not?
Well, thank you for having me on the show, and I want to start by expressing my deep condolences for the family of the ones who lost their lives in this terrible earthquake, and prayers go to those who are still stuck in the rubble of their buildings, and the wounded, and the many who have been also displaced, and they are suffering. Profound suffering, and how ironic that for the humanitarian aid to be allowed into Syria, it requires a license by the Treasury Department in the United States. That license number 23 was issued on February 9. The license comes 3 days after the earthquake took place. What was barely needed in the first was the first hours when. And the first days when people were still, there was high hopes that people were alive under the rubble. We needed that equipment. We needed that aid. We needed these teams to be there and to be equipped. We needed the money to actually allow them to move around in a fast way and to actually get people out from under the rubble and provide them with the basic needs that they require in order to stay alive. This was not possible because the actual license came 3 days after, and it was only a license for NGOs and for people who are not related to the Syrian government, whereas the Syrian government has the actual capacity to move on the ground. And the Syrian
government means that even wiring money to Syrian banks is not allowed because it has to go through the Syrian Central Bank, which is exempted from this license, isn't it?
Exactly. It's exempted from the license because it's related to the Syrian government. So the license said explicitly that anything related to the Syrian government is not allowed to be, you know, is not included in this kind of license. And that actually exacerbates the suffering because we cannot get the money in order to get the heavy equipment and the actual capacity of the rescue teams to help these people who are still stuck under the rubble. And, you know, now we have a huge humanitarian crisis with the people who are displaced in the hundreds of thousands.
Who's going to actually find a living space for them? That we also are, as the Syrians are suffering from the cumulative effect of the ongoing sanctions that started in 2011. So, I mean, people were not able, the government was not able to help the people because they were hindered to begin with. The institutions were not rehabilitated. The infrastructure was not ready because of 11 years of war.
Yes.
I mean, do that have no weight according to international law? Who bears the responsibility of this deliberate suffocation, especially after this catastrophe?
Well, you know, the sanctions were created a phobia, an international phobia. So every nation that some nations in the West wanted to help, you know, but they can't because they are afraid that they will be hit by U.S. Sanctions and measures against them by the U.S. government. So this kind of terrorizing regime in the United States, terrorizing authority, terrorizing anyone who wants to help people who are suffering from an international disaster. It's horrible. And, you know, this is creating more and more deaths in Syria because, and the responsibility goes to the United States government. Responsibility is the responsibility of the Security Council I believe that the Security Council, according to the law, is in charge of peace and security around the world. So the members of the Security Council must take immediate action to allow all humanitarian aid to go into Syria.
Antonio Guterres is going to Syria next month, so I don't think he cares enough to try and solve this. But since you're saying that people must help in every way possible, what are ways, in your opinion, that that countries or states or entities outside Syria can bypass these sanctions? I mean, Lebanon is one of those, but what really can they do?
Let me first say that bypassing the sanctions in these circumstances is a humanitarian duty. Everybody around the world and all the NGOs and regimes and people and anyone around the world should actually bypass these sanctions and get the actual basic aid that is needed by the Syrian and Turkish people. I mean, the Syrian people especially, because they are under so many restrictions, and it's all, you know, based on an American unilateral kind of blockade on Syria that is depriving it from rebuilding the very basic necessities for the Syrian people. In fact, I just want to also point out, before I continue answering your question, to a resolution that was passed by the Security Council of the United Nations itself in 2013, the resolution number 68/200, that considers that any unilateral sanctions such as these against a developing country is countered the actual principle of international law and the principles of the United Nations. These sanctions, who's suffering from these sanctions? The Syrian people, the regular people. They are saying that these sanctions target the government. Well, the people are the number one, you know, they are suffering tremendously. And in situations like this, it is truly unacceptable. And really, after today, you know, talking about humanitarian work and humanitarian principles is really, I mean, nonsense if these sanctions are not lifted immediately. The Syrian people are in dire need for any kind of humanitarian assistance. A lot of the assistance came from Lebanon, some of the assistance. I mean, Lebanon has also limited capacities. Hezbollah sent yesterday a large convoy to Latakia. This is a, you know, and there's another convoy moving today and tomorrow to support our brothers and sisters in Syria. It's very positive, and one must say and recognize that some Arab countries, Gulf countries like the Emirates, have provided help for the Syrian people. This is very much appreciated. Mm-hmm. And I think this is important. This goes back to the root of our humanitarian principles. It is, I take this advantage from being here with you to actually call upon anyone around the world to help the people of Syria. Mm-hmm. This earthquake could happen anywhere to anyone.
Definitely. Definitely, Dr. Omar Nashevi, political analyst and lawyer expert in human rights and international sanctions. Thank you for being with us. I want to advise every one of you, ladies and gents, to follow Al-Qaws, which is the magazine that Dr. Nashevi publishes in. He wrote extensively about why the sanctions should be removed and how they can be removed. I want to thank you, ladies and gents, for following us, for being there, especially right now, especially for the Syrians, especially for those who have no voice. We are their voices. Look, our minister in Lebanon said that the airport in Lebanon and the ports of Lebanon are open to help the Syrian people. So please send the help that Syria needs. Lebanon is open for all countries, especially European countries, to help Syria. If you don't want to be sanctioned by the US, come along. Come to us in Lebanon. We are more than happy to take whatever you bring to Syria because we don't care about the sanctions. We care about brothers and sisters who are under the rubble in Aleppo, Latakia, in Hama, and in Tartus, and also in the northern occupied territories as well. We need help for everyone. We will see you again, hopefully in better times, next week on the Middle East Stream.
In the limelight.
With the acknowledgement of investigative journalist Seymour Hersh, quoting informed American sources, the Biden administration